Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, the co-chairman of the IBM Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the endowment by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation this morning is with Kyle McSlarrell. Kyle's the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Energy. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning.
And joining us in our conversation is Kevin Costell. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Kyle, let's begin by finding out about the Department of Energy. Could you tell us about its mission?
The mission of the Department of Energy is a fairly diverse one. Because of its history, it has several major focuses. One is the continuation of the nuclear weapons complex. I mean, the real beginnings of the Department of Energy can be found in the establishment of the Los Alamos site in the early 40s as part of the Manhattan Project. And really, the business of nuclear energy got its start, obviously, with the weapons program. So that's sort of one track. Another track is that as a result of that nuclear weapons program, over most of the 50s and 60s, and even into the 70s, at a time when the Cold War began to end, and we were winding down, not eliminating, but winding down some of those activities, we discovered something new that was important to the American public, and that was protection of the environment. And they had made a hash of the environment at some of these sites. And so we have about an $8 billion environmental cleanup program. That is very challenging, that I spend a lot of personal time on, and we can talk more about that later. The science mission is something that's related to both of those, and that is a variety of national labs. There are actually 17 national labs that we have in the Department of Energy complex that had their origins as part of the nuclear weapons program. Sort of big science, big physics, accelerators and things like that, but have really broadened into almost every discipline within science. And they support those other activities in addition to sort of the final branch, which is, as the name suggests, a focus on energy policy. And it's an interesting thing that we're really a technology agency, a lot of R&D at the labs. And our name suggests that we actually have something to do with running energy policy in the country. And the truth is we actually have very little to do. We're not a regulatory agency, but we really try to use science broadly defined to provide us with solutions to energy policy as well as some of these other kinds of focuses.
Well, set the context for us. Could you tell us about the budget of the department, the number of people, and I guess what was interesting when you described so much, the kinds of skills the employees have?
Well, the budget is about $23 billion now, and the Department of Energy is an interesting creature, if you will. It's a little different from other cabinet agencies in that there are only about 15,000 federal employees and well over 100,000 contract employees. All these national labs I was talking about a moment ago are largely run by contractors. And in everyday life, there's often not really a distinction made between people who are contract employees and federal employees. We all sort of seamlessly work back and forth, but nonetheless, there is a difference. As I said before, we have about 17 national labs. The makeup of the workforce, because it's so heavily focused on science, is that we have very senior, very skilled, highly skilled employees. And I'm not certain what a comparison would be to other cabinet agencies, but I'll bet as a proportion of management that we probably have more senior level management and people, a lot of people with doctorates and degrees and things that I couldn't even pronounce at this point than a lot of other cabinet agencies.
Well, how about a little history lesson here? The labs date back, it sounds like, almost 50 years ago, but the department recently celebrated its 25th anniversary. I wonder if you would tell us how it came to be a department.
Yeah, the as I said before, the origins were really in the Manhattan Project, and that became institutionalized once it came out of, I mean, originally, of course, the Manhattan Project was secret. Lots of things were happening, but no one talked about it. But after World War II, when it became public, and it was institutionalized. It was institutionalized in something called the Atomic Energy Commission, which had really two functions. One was the defense side of nuclear energy, and the other was to kickstart the civilian uses of nuclear energy. And you may recall President Eisenhower actually had a famous speech called the Atoms for Peace speech, which I think this year is actually going to be the celebration of the 50th anniversary of that in the early 50s, which really jump-started the civilian nuclear program. And the AEC, the Atomic Energy Commission, was sort of responsible for all of the activities that you would think of as the core of the Department of Energy. But over time, what happened is because there were so many scientists, you know, Nobel Prize winners and the like, associated with that level of activity, particularly on the physicist side of things, that they started branching out and labs started being added to the mix in biology and material science. I mean, you name it, astronomy, it was being added to the mix. And over time, there were several different things going on related to nuclear energy, in addition to which there was an increasing awareness, particularly with the first 1973 oil shock, and then more particularly the one in 77, that produced a real desire to do something about energy policy. And so what Congress essentially did was cobble together a variety of different organizations that had a different history and a different legacy, but had something in common. And we would argue that the something in common really was national security, but you could look at it through a different prism and package them together, as you said, 25 years ago, into something called the Department of Energy. And it's an experience, and maybe you'll want to get into this, but it's an experience with a lot of lessons and a lot of lessons that my counterparts at the new Department of Homeland Security are interested in, because it similarly is taking a lot of organizations with their own histories and their own culture, their own way of doing things, and putting them together and requiring somebody to build out of that a coherent, mission-focused organization.
Cal, can you share what your roles are and responsibilities on a day-to-day basis as a deputy secretary?
There are several different ways of looking at it. One is, from the president's point of view, he's designated the deputy secretaries of the departments as the chief operating officers of those departments. And it's often called, although not always within my hearing range, chief bottle washer or utility infielder. And it's a lot like that. The secretaries of the cabinet departments tend to be a lot like chairman of the board or CEO types of executives. And so it's not exactly the same as you would find in the private sector, but it's not dissimilar. And so I define it, and I think each deputy approaches that COO responsibility differently. I really try to focus on a couple of broad things. One is I'm probably the chief policy advisor for the secretary. So I try to integrate the policies that are coming up through the programs to make sure that they're consistent with one another. And as we were just talking about, the kinds of issues we're dealing with, the diversity of those issues is so great that it's not easy for other people really below the deputy or the secretarial level to make the calls in terms of what really should be the priorities. And at the end of the day, I see my job in terms of policy and of budget is ensuring that President Bush's priorities and Secretary Abraham's vision is carried out, and that as people are doing the work, A, they understand what those priorities are, what the vision is, B, that we implement the programs to get there. And that can take, you know, a variety of different forms, but It's a lot of trying to ensure that the management of the system produces results. President Bush has been very clear with all of us that at the end of the day, if government doesn't produce results, then we are failing. So we tend to be very focused on performance. And so in my daily interactions, that's what I'm looking for. Did something happen? Ideally, did something happen that we wanted it to happen? And what haven't we done? How do we get there? What's the plan to get there? Where are the problems? Where are the challenges? What's the fix? And it's just an iterative process that goes on day after day after day. And it's not always something that allows you to say on, you know, a certain day of the month, we did it, we can rest on our laurels, because the business of government is ongoing. So every time you solve one problem, there's going to be 10 more behind it. But it's a fascinating and actually exhilarating job to do.
That's a good point. What role does the Department of Energy have in Homeland Security? We'll ask Kyle McSlarrow of the Department of Energy for his thoughts when the Business of Government Hour returns.